Well, this is the Rowdy Rough Bronies, which I don't know how you feel about My Little Pony, but we're branching out into other areas, and one of our first loves is anime, so of course, gotta interview one of my favorite voice actors, because you took over the role of Zelos, one of my favorite characters of all time. No offense to David Mu, but didn't do the character justice.
And he got me hooked on it too, so.
Well,
that's just my personal opinion, I'm not saying that's your opinion. That's probably his opinion too, but I love David Mu, but just not up there. And also your role in Summer Wars, you did an outstanding job.
Thank you.
So cool.
Like, I watched that movie so many times, I had to buy a new Blu-ray.
What?
That's physically possible.
Wait, you the laser burned a hole in your disc?
It messed it up. As well as my Redline CD, I had to buy a new one too.
Oh yeah. But real quick, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself so the world may know.
Hello, my name is Michael Sinter-Nicholas, and I make voices, and I direct them, and sometimes I mix them, and edit them in Pro Tools. Yes.
And then you gentlemen, since they might not know you, especially you.
I'm Tyler.
That's it. That's all he is. He's Tyler.
He's just Tyler.
And I have the best name in the world. My name is Michael. Just throw that out there.
It's kind of sad because your name is not as cool as mine. I'm named after a city and a football team. My name's Dallas.
Well, your football team doesn't win.
Let's take a majority rule at this table. Who thinks Michael is the best name in the world?
I.
Well, considering my middle name is Michael, I have to go with that.
Whoa, so we got four
to one, so you can just shush.
You do have the home court advantage. We're in Dallas. Your name is Dallas. It's super meta.
Yep.
Yeah, super meta.
Yeah.
I'm OP.
And also real quick, for those of our listeners that don't know, you play Dean Venture as well.
Yep.
I didn't even realize that was you, actually.
No?
No, because...
Oh, that's a shocker. Usually get that stuff first try.
I know. That's Ooh. The highest compliment I can give to a voice actor
Ooh.
Is if they can... I hate to make...
Fool you.
Yeah, to fool me, and I don't like to sound like I have a huge ego about knowing voices, but I love voice acting with a fiery passion. My goal is to be an ADR director one day, because I think voice acting is one of the hardest acting professions you can possibly do. Because you have so little room, you can't move around a lot, the mic will pick it up, and you have to make battle noises if you're in anime and all that kind of stuff.
So you just want to make your life difficult for yourself.
Basically. Well, I have these guys, so.
He's known him for 2 minutes, and he pinned you down.
And we've been telling you for 8 years.
But you listen to him and not us.
But I gotta say, what was one of your most challenging yet fun roles?
Challenging yet fun. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Why do I always draw a blank when this happens? I know there were a few that I was like, there are different kinds of challenges. There's emotionally challenging, there's physically challenging. I was Guy Shishio in Gao Gaigar,
mm-hmm.
and it was the screamiest show in the universe. I don't know if you know the show, but I think the basic conceit is it's all about being brave. If you... it's like an America bleep yeah kind of show, except it's Japanese. If you have a 2% chance of success, if you are brave, you can turn 2% into over 100%, which is mathematically not, you know, whatever. But who cares? It's about, you know, being super kick-ass and working hard and being devoted and believing in yourself. So it was all like gung-ho, F yeah, rah, and super power-ups all the time. I mean, it's like the yelliest thing since, you know, Dragon Ball. Perhaps. And so that was kind of challenging to always be yelling and screaming. Then there's like emotionally rough things. And sometimes it's tough to direct stuff too. Actually, I had to... Okay, I'm going to bum everyone out. I prepare to be bummed in 3, 2... I did a Tezuka production film, Jungle Emperor Leo. And it was their answer, actually, to Lion King, which a lot of people said was, you know, like copied from, you know, Kimba and Simba, whatever. But so they made their own film. I got the materials with no time to produce it right after my mom passed away. And in the movie, you know, the mother lion actually gets this plague that is sweeping through the jungle and dies. And her son and daughter are like, Mom, what's going on? And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh, no.
But I just decided in that moment I was going to tuck in and make it as authentic as possible. Not like heartstringy or whatever, just make it the way it is. Cool. And, you know, and play the truth of it. So stuff like that. So that was pretty hard. I mean, you asked.
I'm sorry for your loss. I lost my mom back when I was a freshman in high school. That was back in 2003. So I do understand at least some of the.
I lost my mom in 2003.
Oh wow.
Whoa.
Freaky. It's like we're brothers, only closer.
Don't turn into like a
But I gotta say, did you know about the weight of the Slayer series whenever you auditioned for Zelos?
Yeah, okay, so Funimation wanted me to do a new Slayers, and I commend them because it would have been quicker and easier for them just to do it themselves. But they wanted to keep the cast together, which I always applaud. I mean, some companies I've worked for are like, whatever, make it English. I'm like, this already existed and people liked it, and that's why you licensed it. Maybe you should honor the fan base by...
Just go with what works. Yeah. If they broke, don't fix it.
And, you know, and bring back what they wanted. Don't just like, oh, all of a sudden, now Luke Skywalker's not Mark Hamill. Like, why would you do that for, you know, The Empire Strikes Back, you know? I'm your father. Now, like... I'm your father, and it's Pee Wee Herman. Why? Whatever. Not that it would be that ridiculous, but come on. So good on Funimation for doing that. And then they were like, "Can you get the band back together?" Some of them had moved around. Eric Stewart was living in Nashville. Yeah. Got him back. You know, Crispin Freeman was in California, but my studio's bi-coastal, so that was doable. And then the only person we couldn't get back was David. And it was Funimation's idea. They were like, "Well, I mean, you could." And I was like, oh, that'd be great. I mean, I'm a little nervous because it's a beloved show and I don't want to like step in as like the replacement, the only replacement, you know, since we got everyone else back. You know, of course, Lisa Ortiz, I've been friends with for a million years. Like,
she's a wonderful person.
She's a wonderful person, a fantastic actor, and there's no other Lena Inverse.
Mm-hmm.
Amen to that.
She also bakes really good cookies.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
Exclusive here.
Yeah. You heard it here first.
But I do have to say that I watched the Japanese a lot, the Japanese version a lot, because that was the first DVD set I ever bought was Slayers Next, because it had Zelos in it. That was my favorite arc until the new seasons came out. And I would listen to Japanese, and you are the closest person I've ever seen get to the Japanese Zelos.
Thanks.
Whenever you got serious, I was like, I don't want to deal with that.
He's a monster.
He really is.
He seems light on the surface, but the still waters run deep.
Exactly. But Brunson over here, we don't call him Michael, we call him Brunson.
They don't.
His last name. We know five Michaels now, six including.
And since you can't see the visual here, he's got a shimmery hat.
Have you seen Back to the Future Part 2? It is Marty McFly's hat from
Back to the Future Part 2. No doubt. And where's your hoverboard?
I left it in the time machine.
Science has lied to us.
I left it with like my picture from me and Doc when we went to the clock tower.
That's as funny as screen doors on a battleship.
It's a screen door, submarine, you idiot. You talked a little bit about how you were able to get most of the band back together for Slayers. Has there been a project you've been a part of that you wish you could have kept going? Like I want this to go on forever. Where it's just been like, hey, you know, we... Stop now, you know, it's done.
I'm going to say that one day about Venture Brothers, I'm sure. I felt that way about Turtles. I got to be in a room full of brothers, you know, and we recorded together for like 7 years. We got real close. And at some point, there was pizza. We recorded every Wednesday, standing gig, always there. By the end of the session, we'd start smelling pepperoni wafting through the vents. The actor who plays Michelangelo and I were always like, and it's all we couldn't focus on anything. Like, pizza. It's, yeah. There was a lot of shows. Honestly, Care Bears. Gal Geiger. I talked about Gal Geiger.
Mm-hmm.
It's super screamy. We only did the first season. There were two, and then Media Blasters pulled the plug. They were like, we're not making enough money. It's not selling enough. So, and since then, I've gotten lots of angry people like, why didn't you finish? I'm like, it's not my fault. Write an angry letter to them. You know, if you tell them you'll buy it, they'll be like, okay, some money on the table. We'll do more. But, the Care Bears. Okay. This is primarily or was originally a pony or pony podcast?
Yeah. We appealed to everyone, but the main focus was about the new My Little Pony show.
All right, so check this out. Care Bears, produced for Hub. Uh-huh. The head writer was Amy Keating Rogers, who was a writer on My Little Pony. Uh-huh. She's amazing. Uh-huh. She may have also written the Derpy episode. Right? Yeah. To hear her talk about it's amazing. She actually has a disabled son. So she has two kids. One's disabled. Yeah. So when people were like, oh, you're invalidating us disabled people, she's like,
yeah,
no,
well,
I'm not.
We dealt with a whole episode about that and how ludicrous it was. Yeah.
You gotta talk to her. It's really great to hear her side of it. I mean, she was doing what she was told, and you know. But she's an amazing writer. And I think because of the Brony phenomenon, uh-huh. I'll call it that, the network was like, oh, we could, you know, maybe skew the show up and make it sort of like that. So what was cool was Care Bears got a lot hipper. And I really think the show was strong. But the problem is, I think what killed it was the marketing. Someone was like, hey, if you like My Little Pony, then like this too. And I was like, it's not the same. It's 3D, not 2D.
They also went as far to say, the bronies, Care Bear fans, will be belly bros.
And that's a horrible term. I was like, why wouldn't it be Care Bros? I mean, or something.
Yeah.
Belly bros? That's so sumo. I don't know. Like, it's like a chest bump, but with your belly, which is way closer to your junk, and that's not fun.
And
I don't want to bump junk.
Forces just...
Yeah.
And an immovable... And a, I think that sort of killed it, and it sucks because it should have been like on its own accord. Like a, you know, it was a really good show.
I usually give a new series at least 7 episodes, and it was a very good show. It really was. It's a shame that a lot of, because of that kind of headline of being belly bros, a lot of bronies would go out of their way to trash that show because they thought it was just going to be a blatant ripoff. It was its own thing.
Yeah, it was totally different.
And I'm pretty sure that Amy worked her butt off to do that. And that's a slap in the face to a writer, and I can't stand that.
Yeah, we all worked really hard. And there were some amazing children on the show, too. It was really fun to do the sessions with the kids in the room. It's so much fun. I'm really into photography, and I have a camera that's got a leaf shutter, so it makes no noise.
Yeah.
And so I could shoot during takes. And I was always standing next to Michaela Dean, who was Wonderheart, and we would like take pictures, load it on my iPad, and then process them to look. And she's an adorable, brilliant little girl, and she always wanted to make it look uglier and uglier. I think it's hilarious. She's not like, make me pretty. She's like, make me look like a zombie. I was like, shoot with your mouth open, like bagels and cream cheese falling out of her mouth. Make it look grosser and grosser. We were buds.
That's so cool.
It was such a fun show to work on. Everyone was great. And then we had like singing, and it was so much fun.
I've never heard anybody talk about having a session with working with children. So that's really cool.
It was so fun. There's nothing like it. Like, I do kids' voices a lot. I book them all the time. I play young teenagers. But working with real kids is like a whole different thing, and it's so much fun. And now, wherever possible, I cast them for the stuff I'm directing, like the movies I'm doing, like Ernest and Celestine, which is Oscar nominated. I don't know if you heard about it. It was of course Frozen 1. But we have tons of children in it, and it's great. Like, just screaming their heads off, and like being cute, being sassy, being bratty, being like.
How is it working with kids? I mean, there is the childish level, but I know there's a professional level as well. Do they reach that level as well, or is it just?
I gotta say, like, they can. I like the sense of play. My studio's bicoastal. In the LA studio, I have a playmat on the ground. And it's sort of, I mean, I was like, I had to carpet it, and I saw these play mats, like, with cities and fire station and, like, roads.
Yeah, I used to have one.
Yeah, I did, too. So I was like, mine was made out of some weird plastic. This one's like a carpet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that was, like, a cancerous thing that in my youth.
Probably had, like, lead in it.
And asbestos. It's flame retardant, but it's also life retardant. So,
yes.
I put it down there because I'm like, it's for just to remind myself of a sense of play.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they call plays a play. You know, it's not a work, and there should always be a factor of fun. There also should be professionalism, you know, but it's fun. And honestly, this is going to sound a little like I'm a dumb man-child, but in a way, like, I've worked with new people, experienced people, children, celebrities, Oscar winners, you know, and I feel like when I work with kids, I get to be more like myself.
Yeah.
Like, there's no affectation. I don't have to be cool. I don't have to seem like cast airs.
If you don't mind me saying this, there's not that professional pressure with them. Like, around celebrities, they they give off that kind of pressure, like, I have to do my best. With kids, you can be like, I can do my best, but I can still have fun with it.
Well, in a way, I feel like I'm at my best when I'm working with a kid because, you know, the play, we just, like, vibe off each other, and then we just have a ball.
It's so fun.
It's super fun. It's super fun. Also, I mean, the kids get vetted. It's not like I just have every random kid off the street. Like, the kids who win the audition are the ones I play with, and they usually win because they really wanted to do it or take it seriously. Every now and then someone's like, I'm tired, I wanna, you know, if they're really, 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 really young. We did something with a friend's daughter who's bilingual, actually, and she was great. She's really young, and she didn't really want to be there. That was hard. If that's the case, then you're pulling teeth a little bit. But she was brilliant in the role in the end, and everyone's like, you just hear the voice and go, aww. So what was the question, though? Wait, I'm totally off track, right?
For kids, did you find that the level adjustment from, of course, playing and then enjoying the time and then actually recording, did it work out well? I mean, of course, any voice actor has a professional level, and then off the mic, they're, you know, you make jokes and stuff. Were the kids the exact same way?
Yeah, I mean, every person's different, but I gotta say, like the aforementioned Michaela Dean, she's a genius. And actually, when we recorded, I directed Peter Rabbit for Nickelodeon, and there was some trouble finding, so they were auditioning people for like 3 months, and then all in New York, and I suggested we could bring some people in L.A., because my studio's bi-coastal, and it wasn't gonna cost the production any more money. Like, you hire my studio, you can get in New York and or L.A.
Yeah.
So, great, it's free to you, and you can more than double down on your casting options. I had worked with Michaela on Care Bears, and so I brought her in, and boom, she won the role of Lily right away. Mm-hmm. And she was awesome at it. And, you know, she loves the work. And that was the thing that I really bonded with her on Care Bears. It sounded like, I bonded with a 10-year-old, because she was really all about the work. Like, a lot of the other grown-ups were like, oh, you're so adorable, I just want to eat you up, you know? And she would say, I would see her process like, oh, thank you, I acknowledge that you're being nice to me, but I don't know how to apply that to my work, and, you know, so I will just say thank you and be polite.
That's awesome.
And there were other kids who were like, I'm being pretty or cutesy, or like, if they give me positive attention, then like, beam. But she just wanted to do good work, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. Don't lose that. So I think it's weird to be like, oh, you're cute. Like, I didn't like that as a kid, like people roughing up my hair.
Oh,
so I just, my nickname for her was Old Chap. And we would have this like thing where we'd do terrible British accents, deliberately terrible, and good day, old chap, and we talked about drinking tea, and she never had tea, and then for her birthday she wanted to have real tea, and then me and another Care Bear, Stephanie Shea, who, you know, mm-hmm. who's like Naruto, Bleach, Erica Seven, everything, Michaela's mom was like, hey, you know, do you want to take her out for her birthday or something? We were like, yeah, totally. We took her to a tea shop that serves like high tea, like British tea. She said she'd never had tea. I'm like, what? How does that make any sense? She's like, iced tea, but not like proper tea. So we took her to a tea house. Her mom left. And I was like, what? You're leaving your now 10-year-old daughter? She was 9 until like today. So we had high tea, and it was really, really fun. What am I talking about? Just like how much I love Michaela.
That's what I like.
Well, this is a conversational
really
podcast.
Her, but she wasn't here.
I'm sorry.
This actually worked out really well for us.
Your turn, Richard.
Just real quick, I have one last thing to say. Not enough people really give you proper credit for this, but US Cap and Mikey was amazing. I adored that show. I have it all on my DVR.
Whoa, really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have all the episodes. Wow. Kappa Mikey, okay, here's a little side note on Kappa Mikey. A friend of mine who was a translator at Media Blasters, who's Japanese, had a friend I think it's called Mixi, it's like a Japanese Facebook,
mm-hmm.
had a friend from Japan who was a big Turtles fan.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, my friend plays Leonardo, Michael plays Leolangelo. And she's like, what did I just say, Leolangelo?
Leolangelo.
That was the fifth girl turtle in real life.
Yes.
The sister they never
Venus de Langelo. So my friend Michael plays Leonardo. Oh my gosh, the strokes and the mm-hmm. dyslexia just struck me. It's
Slizdexia.
Onset. Slizdexia.
Slizdexia.
And she's like, yeah, that's my friend. And she's like, oh, that's amazing. And then somehow this Japanese woman finds a file online of this pitch that Animation Collective did for Viacom of Cap'n Mikey. And she's like, oh my gosh, it's about an American actor who's in a Japanese cartoon, but it looks different and everything, and his name is Mikey. Your friend Mikey, for some reason Japanese people love to call me Mikey, your friend Mikey, who was an American voice actor who does Japanese anime, should be Kappa Mikey. And then, so my friend was like, oh, of course, it's not like, oh, hey, you know, they're shooting a new Star Wars. You should totally be in that. Yeah, thanks. No. Like, what am I going to do about that? I'd love to. But her friend, our mutual friend, was like, hey, do you know about this thing? She sent me this video. Look at this. It's so cool. And I was like, so I can't say anything yet, but I've already been cast. Because I'd worked for them before.
The table, just...
Yeah.
That's
pretty cool. That's, cool, that's beautiful.
So I actually just found out today that you were Leonardo, because they're like, because they told us about 30 minutes before, they told us at like 12:25, oh, hey, by the way, you're interviewing him at we're like, oh, okay, let's go ahead and go to the hotel. So I was like, kind of looking up stuff real quick. Like, I need to make sure I actually know anything. I was like, I'm done, Leonardo. I got it. I love the 88 show. We'll always like, it'll always be a classic. But I love the 2003 one so much more, because it actually was like, it actually, because there's stuff going on. It wasn't just like, everyone's all, oh, sweet, I love pizza, cowabunga. You did say what the shell a lot, which, you know, I was like, okay. But I love 2003. Yeah, but I love the show so much. Like, I've got, I love the turtles so much. In my room upstairs, I've got art of like all four turtles, and they're like hanging above my desk where I write. So, and that's like, they're always like my inspiration for if I ever like am writing something, or if I ever like, I make D&D campaigns and I make all sorts of crazy stuff going on. They're always inspiration. I'm always like, what if I were a turtle, what would I do? But I always use them as inspiration. So is there a, maybe not a franchise, but like either a group of characters, a certain story or something like that that inspires you, that when you're like, I need to get the creative juices flowing, that you think to that?
Oh, okay. Well, in terms of my creative process, inspiration will come from many forms. And I try to, as much as possible, be out in the world and have conversations with people. I like talking to strangers, too. And
That's always fun.
And that can lead to like just opening your mind a different way. I don't necessarily want my art to imitate art, though I think it's relevant to look at like structure, you know what I mean? And I think Turtles, in terms of like a structure for a show, is huge because of the archetypal characters that they are, you know? And so many other shows I've done have tried to sort of recreate that magic. Actually, a lot of the Animation Collective shows would have like sort of a Mikey character, and then sort of a Leo character, and like a Raffy character. But I gotta say, in terms of like shows that I've worked on that gave me some other sort of inspiration, not for the writing, but I mean, the writing on the show is great. I don't mean that. I just mean Turtles actually was a sort of a big inspiration for me. And I did this in my last interview. I don't want to sound corny, but it meant a lot to me to play Leonardo, and it was hugely impactful, beneficial, inspiring for me to step into his headspace every week for 7 years, you know? He's such a good person? Terrapin? I don't know.
He's a good teenager.
He's such a good brother. I mean, he loves his family, his whole thing. And there was a dark arc, you know, where he gets like sort of like gruff and D-baggy Leo. And I was like, why are we making him sort of so like angry? We recorded that three different ways. And the first time, the director actually wanted me to sound so angry that it didn't even sound like him anymore. And I was like, really? Because it's always a question when you're doing, like if I imitate one of the other voice actors, like if I'm like, well, Mikey said this, then I have to do a Mikey voice. I could do a really good Mikey voice, but that doesn't sound like Leo doing a Mikey voice. It sounds like a professional voice actor who can do other voices doing a voice. So you have to sort of like temper it. Anyway, so when he was like, be super angry and sound, you know, like someone else, it was super deep and like angry. It was like Batman Leonardo. And I was like, I don't know that that's a good idea. I mean, not quite as, you know, like this pushed as it. But it was, you know, super dark. And I was like, I get that he's upset, but like, we have to think about why. And it was funny, there was a transition at that point, like with the directors. And the important thing about that arc for Leo is that he was terrified that they almost died. They were going to die except for some dumb plot twist, quite literally, like, oh, time stopped, and some alien was like, we're going to pluck you out of this dangerous situation. Thanks, Utroms, but come on. We were going to die. By all rights, we lost. The Shredder defeated us. And the other guys were like, oh, we got our shells pulled out of the fire, but Leo never forgot that it was their failing. So now, if they're screwing around, he's going to get super mad. He's like, we could face this again and die. But rather than be like, come on, you should really study, he was like, stop that, study, you know, like train, do more push-ups. So, but the motivation was that he loves his family, you know what I mean? So even when he was dark, it was for a good reason. And actually, when I started the show, Sean Schemmel, who's Goku, mm-hmm. Was like, oh my God, you're Leo, but you are Leo. I was like, what? I'm a man, not a teenager or a turtle. He's like, no. He's like, dude. One more, dude. He.
Hello, Sean.
I was born year of the monkey, and I'm Goku, right? I was like, whoa. Okay. He's like, you're born August 13th. You're Leo, and you're Leo. I was like, okay, that's not. I'm sure it's not like Peter Laird picked
us. He's connecting the dots on six different pages to make it work.
And then I was like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. He's like, no, but it's who you are. I was like, I kind of had the wrong idea of who Leo might be. Based on the character description for this new version, I mean, it's all different. Like, I knew about the comics, and like, a friend of mine gave me her like first editions, and I was like, so I was like reading that stuff. I gave him back, but
isn't that what a good friend does?
You should. You always give back.
Good friend, yes, but
no. But I was like, you know, I don't feel like a super tough guy. In fact, in the audition, I asked if I could please read that one first and get it out of the way because it would be my worst one.
Yeah.
And then the producer was like, I'm sorry, what did you say? Subtext, are you telling me you suck? Like, what? This is an audition. You're supposed to put your best foot forward. And I went, oh, crap. I'm just going to run with it. And I go, yeah, I'm not really that talented. Can I just get this over with as quickly and painlessly as possible? He's like, okay, whatever. And then so I read it, and I'm trying to sound tough. And immediately I'm like, you see, I just don't sound that, like, big and brave and heroic. And he goes, they're teenagers. And I go, oh yeah. So I just did it again and relaxed a bit and goes, good, and then move on. Then I was like, Donatello, I slaughtered because I'm so technical and I can correct all these dumb script things about like, the MP. Like, no, that's not what it's called. And like, this is how, like, you know, RAM bus works.
That's exactly why you weren't chosen for that role, because the director did not want that.
No, no.
He's like, Leo, just goes head first.
So, and then, you know, I did a good job on Mikey. Raph was already cast. And then, but then Sean's whole point was the way that I am in my studio is the way Leo is with his brothers. He is not the leader because he has a power trip. He cares about, like, his point to me was, you care about the work you do, you work really hard, you try to, like, you know, I would always, like, pull more all-nighters than anyone that I would employ. And I want to protect the studio and make it a platform for my commute, for actors to be able to do stuff. I gave away so much studio time. I was, like, doing demos for people and, like, trying to help people out. He's like, that's the way you do that. It's not because you're power trip. I'm like, I want to be the boss. I didn't want to be the boss. I just happened to be because I wanted to do something good for people around me, and I made this thing, right? He's like, that's the way Leo is. And I was like, oh. And that really affected how I approached the role. And I thought I was going to be replaced for the whole first season. I was like, they got the wrong guy there. I'm the only new guy here. Everyone else had worked for 4 Kids before. And and then I, you know, 7 years later, we did the 25th anniversary. Yeah.
I have to say, Turtles in Time was amazing. Or was that?
Turtles Forever.
Sorry, I was talking about the game. But the movie Turtles Forever, where the 80s Turtles and then the original Turtles show up. My God, that was beautiful.
Oh, man.
And I got to see it. I think it might have been finally re-released in its original form, but it was edited down when it came out. I got to see it before all the cuts at Comic-Con, at like this invite-only thing, and it was great to see it in a room full of people who really got it. When they like pan across all the different dimensions, turtle dimensions, and they've got like the Japanese one, live-action ones. Like, it was awesome. Everyone's like, whoa! And there were references that went over my head that people were like screaming about, and I was like, I missed one. And it's just me and Donnie. Donnie got to be there. Raph and Mikey were back in New York, but it was so cool to see it like that.
I got one last one for me, and I'll let y'all do your things. But you were talking about when you were in the recording booth for the Turtles, you'd smell pizza.
Yeah, well, smell pizza.
I used to work at Pizza Hut. My buddy works here at Pizza Hut. And
One last question.
What is your favorite pizza?
If you could make the best pizza
ever, what would you make?
It would start with fish and ice cream. You know what I've never had? I like barbecue pizzas. I like corn on pizza.
Corn is really good on pizza.
Corn is good on pizza, right?
No. I'm crazy. I make weird stuff.
I'm nuts for onions anyway. Green peppers. But you can't, if you load it up with too much stuff, then it totally detracts. There are all these new, like, make your own pizza places. Which at first I was like, that's dumb. You're always making your own pizza. You choose the toppings, but then you can choose like the the cheeses and everything, and you can decide a lot of other things about this pizza. Anyway, like pizza.
It's called Pie Five. There's a place. Oh. And here in Texas, we have Pie Five. It's like Subway of pizzas.
Yeah, there's two different ones in LA that I just saw. I would plug them, but I don't know the name, and whatever. Maybe I shouldn't plug them, but I don't know. They were delicious, and I remember. But you can't overload it. One thing that I love. Oh, I wonder if there's a way to do like a tonkotsu ramen pizza.
Oh my God, that sounds delicious.
Dallas, no.
Yeah, with like crazy, crazy chashu pork.
I can make it. I think I can.
But how would you incorporate the noodles exactly? I don't know. Look, I'm a huge ramen aficionado.
You could fry them up, probably.
Yeah, you could fry them up.
Or you could stuff them in the crust.
You can fry them up, put them on the pizza like halfway. Like I work at Pizza Hut. So I take the pizza out, put them on there so they don't get burnt or like too crispy, so they're still warm.
Yeah, and then put them in the.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I have two answers. Okay, so tonkotsu.
Yeah.
Ramen pizza, and I also went to university in North Carolina and got really intimately familiar with their barbecue, and it was very different. And from the east and the west of the state, it's different. So super, super east, more vinegary, and like a super all the way like Jackson's Big Oak in Wilmington, North Carolina. Jackson's Big Oak. We used to call it Jackson's Big Ass because that's what you get after you eat too much. But I discovered it way too late. I will plug this. This is a place that I want to bring my foodie friends to from all over the world, and I just can't do it because Wilmington doesn't even have a proper. I mean, they have an airport, but like, to get there you have to
There's
go to Charlotte.
Much, dude.
It's so expensive to go to Wilmington. Yeah. For the love of Pete. But they've got I went there. I ordered their like sampler of everything: the sausage links, the brisket, the shoulder, the ribs, the pulled pork, and it came with like ice cream scooper. And I just took a bite of the pulled pork. There was no weird bits. There was no fatty bits. Just super, 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 super tender, vinegary. It made my gums itch. I needed more. I ate everything else. Then I ate that. I went, "What is that? I need more of that." Oh, it only comes by the half pound. Okay, so quit eating that, Bobby. So I ate another half pound of pork on top of everything else I'd already eaten. It was bananas. Anyway. That on a pizza would be delicious, but you gotta change how you do the tomato sauce and the cheese, I think. But to serve a lot of proper, full Eastern end pulled pork Carolina barbecue on a pizza, that's my other. Oh, my mouth's watering.
That is the best answer I've heard to that question so far.
But unfortunately, we have to end the interview here. But we heard the last interview you had about your Twitter, and it's not nearly promoted enough. Would you mind talking about so we can at least get you out there so more people can learn more about you?
Okay, yeah, thanks. I'm very clever, but and I will promise to tweet more. It's at MSinter, MSinter. And I've been told recently that I need to promote my onlineness because I don't. I just work all the time. I work all the time.
Well, here's the thing. You use podcasts to do that. You just like, hey, for interviewing me, you just gotta plug me. All right. Okay. Easily done.
And then win-win situation.
And then you got to make me that pizza.
Then you post one thing every week, and everyone's like,
I can try to go for that pizza.
But, yeah, we're done. But thank you again for interviewing us. It was great getting to talk with you.
It's definitely an honor to meet you. If I meet you again, I'll make you that pizza.